Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and on Facebook Live. It's all presented by DraftKings. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Joined by Paul Dottino. I am John Schmelk. Big show today. The Giants announced yesterday that they've added a new member to their defense, middle linebacker Keenan Robinson from the Washington Redskins, and that's a good place to start. But before we get there, want to promote a few things for you folks out there. If you're looking for something to do on Giants.com, our bracket challenge is up. You can go to Giants.com/bracket, and you vote for the top first-round pick in Giants history. Go there. Voting is underway. We already have some big leads from the guys you would expect, the Eli Mannings, the Odell Beckhams, the Lawrence Taylors. But there are some close ones. Rodney Hampton's in a pretty close battle right now. So get there, vote. Tell us who you think the Giants' top first-round pick is. And also, 2 o'clock today, Jason Pierre-Paul is on a conference call. We will be live tweeting that on Twitter, at Giants, if you want to check that out. And if you want to participate on our show on Twitter, go to hashtag GiantsChat. You can comment there, and we'll also try to get to some of your comments on Facebook as well. Towards the end of the show, we'll be with you on Facebook Live the first few minutes. Then you can go to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the show in its entirety. Right after we log off of Facebook, we will be joined by Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. He'll break down the free agents the Giants have already signed, and we'll talk about who's left remaining on the market. All right, Paul, let's talk about Keenan Robinson coming over from the Redskins. A guy who started for the Redskins the last couple of years has had some injury issues. Also, because of performance issues, got pulled for a couple games last year as well. But he's a player that the Giants like his aggression. They like his physical ability. They think he rushed the passer a little bit, and the Giants were in need of a middle linebacker.
He's got some athleticism. He's got some experience. I understand he's a very astute guy, which, of course, helps as well, especially in Steve Spagnuolo's system. The Giants, of course, remember when he played against them a couple years ago and he had a double-digit tackle game. In fact, I remember a game in Washington. Wasn't it that he was the one who came up with the pick when Reuben Randle had the ball jarred in the end zone?
Absolutely. And he made caught it around the goal line. That's correct.
I remember I was standing on the goal line when that play happened. I still think it was a touchdown, but the NFL rules say otherwise. But, yeah, no question.
Sour grapes.
Well, I think it's a bad rule. You're in the end zone. Touchdown. Anyway, long story short, he is an athletic player. He's got some experience. He's on the young side. The Giants have decided to bring him in. And the one thing you know for sure is that they know a lot about him because they've played against him in the division so much.
A lot of tape.
A lot of personal experience. That, to me, is always enhances the value of the equation, because when you've seen a guy as often as you have, and you've not only on tape but in person, you really have a better idea of what your evaluation is going to be.
Now, when you look at the Giants' linebacking core, Paul, are we looking now, you think, at a starting three next year if they happen to come out in your traditional 4-3 defense to stop the run of Robinson in the middle, JT Thomas on one side, Devon Kennard on the other?
You would think so, John. You would think so. Now, there's still some time left in free agency. You still don't know how many guys are going to be cut and left on the street in the next couple of months.
The draft, too.
The draft is still there as well. But I would say right now, the Giants probably have their starting three opening day.
Now, I want to talk to you generally about free agency. We haven't done a show together since the Giants made all these moves last week.
No, that's true.
We've been on separate shows. And I want to go back to what we talked about a couple weeks ago, because you talked about the danger of doing too much early and then not having resources left. And I was kind of on the other end. I was kind of more in favor of what ended up happening, where you target some top guys, you get them. Now, even I'm not sure. I thought they were going to get three of the top guys at a couple different positions. I didn't even think that was going to happen. So, you know, Jerry Reese, great job going out there being aggressive. But now the Giants sit, Paul, where you had some concern about them sitting, where now they don't have quite as many resources left, and you have guys still left in the market that can come over and help your team.
Yeah.
But you have to be careful on how you structure these salaries, what money you give to people now, because you've used a lot of your resources on these guys early in the process. So with where the Giants are now, to you, what's the next step?
Well, I think that there are two glaring holes. And again, as far as I'm concerned, I'm looking at this from an experience perspective. I'm not in favor of having a rookie opposite Landon Collins at safety. I want a veteran safety.
And when you say rookie, you're including guys like Bennett Jackson and Nat Burhey,
yeah.
Guys that don't have a lot of
experience. Is a better word.
That's fine. I just wanted to be clear.
You know, and for that reason, I really would like to see them pick up a big brother for Landon Collins at safety. And that hasn't happened to this point.
And there are names out there that still fit that bill.
There are a few. Mm-hmm. There are a few. And again, the numbers dictate some of those conversations, John. As we just found out, Eric Weddle got, what, $7 million a year to go to the Ravens.
Which is, I think, about when this whole process started. I think that's around where we thought he'd land.
And he's a top-tier guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yes.
At this point, the Giants have to be looking at second-tier guys because the numbers that they've used to get their big fish ate up a chunk.
And you have to save money to fill out the roster,
no
draft picks, all that sort of
okay.
thing. And, you know, carrying money into next year, also when you have to start thinking about giving Beckham an extension, re-signing Pugh, Richburg, guys like that.
Hankins,
that's
maybe
something.
Too.
Oh, Jonathan Hankins, another good point. You have to start saving money for those guys in the future as well.
So I think the free safety spot, I'm still stressing a veteran at free safety. And the other spot that I still believe that they should go for a veteran to fill is the offensive line spot.
Right tackle specifically.
I'm specifically looking at a run-blocking right tackle, a guy who's very proficient in the run-blocking game. He can be okay in the pass-blocking game, but I need a guy who's going to maul, a guy who's going to really pay. I need Kareem McKenzie is what I need. The problem is Kareem's retired.
Well, and this being the Giants' most active free agency period since probably 2005, at least in my opinion, and making
right.
the most big acquisitions, I think that name is apropos. All right, guys, thank you for joining us on Facebook Live. Go to Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live is the show. Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus will be joining us in just a second. Then we'll take your calls as well. So thanks for joining us. We'll see you on Giants.com, everybody. And, of course, if you're on Giants.com, the show continues. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Now, Paul, obviously, I think you like the fact that you bring in a guy like Keenan Robinson, who the Giants are familiar with. Now, obviously, you talk about a player like that, you're trying to figure out what his contribution can be this year based on what he's done in the past. Based on the people I've talked to, he seems to be a better coverage backer than he is a run stuffer. I have not looked at the tape of a lot of his games yet to make that determination for myself. I'm going off what other people are saying. What are your thoughts in that regard?
Well, he's coming from a 3-4. So you have to understand that is one adjustment he's going to have to make. If he's going to be the starting middle linebacker for the Giants in the 4-3, he's going to have to understand that that role is a little bit different. And I agree with you, by the way, in terms of his athleticism. He does tend to be more – look, we saw him at the facility. He's more lean than he is bulky, you know. In fact, my first thought was, when I first looked at him, I said to myself, okay, he looks almost like a little bit more like a strong side linebacker on the outside physically than he does a guy in the middle.
Right.
I mean, for example, you folks want to get a chance to compare. I know you can't see him right here, but think of Antonio Pierce, who was 6'1", 235.
Yeah, he was stout.
Robinson, 6'3", 238. So he's got the weight of a Pierce, but because he's 2 inches taller, it's a little more slender. And Antonio had a, like you say, stout. He had a little bit more of a fireplug body to him, a little thicker. So that's what you're looking at. Now, what he's going to have to do really well is make sure that he's physical enough and puts on enough strength here in the offseason program to handle the rigors of being a middle linebacker in a 4-3. It's a little different, John. He's going to have to do a little bit more of plugging and attacking the line of scrimmage and coming straight forward and plugging a hole as opposed to maybe a little bit more of the space kind of player that he was with the Redskins.
Now, yeah, and he was on the field, by the way, in passing situations.
Yes, he was.
For them.
Yes. And that's, again, this is all part of what they're going to have to do with him. Now, one thing I will say, I do think, and, you know, we're going to have to ask, you talked to him yesterday. Maybe he answered this. In the Giants 4-3, I think they're looking at him as a guy who could stay on the field for all three downs. Are they not? Did he say that?
He did not say that.
He did not say that.
No, but
I would think so.
He talked about himself being a two-way player.
because in the Redskins 3-4, he did stay on the field and he did play in space. In the Giants 4-3, that middle linebacker has to drop back some and take care of that zone in front of the safeties a lot. As you know, the Giants had trouble with that particular area of the field this year. So I'm very curious to see what Robinson's proficiency is going to be in that regard, because that's something he's shown he can do with the Redskins. Is he going to be able to mentally handle the adjustment to be that one guy in the middle instead of having somebody on the side of him? You know, when you're an inside guy, you got guys on both sides here to help you out because the field's broken up into smaller segments.
And Paul, what I like about it, too, is that when you have Ben McAdoo as your head coach, you know, this is a guy that has scouted these defensive players as an offensive coach. So he knows what it's like to game plan against a guy like Keenan Robinson.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He sees him on tape. He knows that he knows what the deal is, and he knows what he brings to the football field.
I do think the hit and miss quotient is better when you take a guy from within your division because of your familiarity with them. Again, not just on tape and on film, but because you personally have played those guys up close and personal on the same field, in most cases two times a year. So you do usually have a better idea, you know, from experience of what the guy is, a little better than maybe if he's coming from another conference.
Absolutely. So. And, you know, and I like the fact that, again, he knows what type of player he is to game plan against. And in a lot of ways, you almost would prefer to have the offensive head coach picking these guys, because Steve Spagnuolo, for example, not to say he doesn't know a lot about Keenan Robinson. He looked at the tape, he did his homework, and that's the defense he's going to fit into. But during the year, Spagnuolo wasn't the one scouting Keenan Robinson. It was Ben McAdoo, because he's the guy that's the game plan against him. So I think
that's
give some level of knowledge and understanding what he'll bring to this defense because you're game planning against him. Now we're joined by our good friend of the program. I spent some time with him at the Combine. A lot of fun. Sam Monson joins us from Pro Football Focus. Sam, you got John Schmoke and Paul Dottino here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. How you doing this afternoon?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Hey, we're doing great, man. Thanks for calling in, Sam. And I want to start with a couple of back-to-back questions here on Olivier Vernon, and then I'm going to pass you off to Paul. Because I think something you wrote in one of your articles the other day was right on the money, I think, very interesting. So for the fans who maybe haven't read your stuff on Vernon, give us your take on the player the Giants are getting and compare the player Vernon was for the last eight games of last year and compare that to the player he was for the first 3.5 years of his career.
I think that's the key, is that we don't really know what the player is the Giants are getting. If they're getting the guy that played the final eight games of last season, they're getting one of the best edge defenders in the NFL, a legitimate all-pro kind of player. If they're getting the guy that played, you know, the season and a half before that, they're getting a guy who's okay, you know, better than average, not bad, can start games, but is not going to go out and destroy anybody. I mean, he played some incredible football for the last eight games of last season, but the difference between the first half of last year and the second half was just incredible. I think over the first eight games of last season, he was the 47th ranked edge defender at PFF, something like 38 spots below his teammate Cameron Wake. He had 24 total pressures over that first half of the season, which was, I think, somewhere in the mid-teens, mid-20s, something like that, in terms of edge defenders. Over the second half of the season, he was by far the best-graded edge defender in the NFL, had 50-something total pressures. It was absolutely ridiculous. So if you're talking about his ceiling and, you know, the player that he's shown he can be, it's one of the best players in the league and definitely worth the contract that they paid him. But we're really talking about just eight games of proof that he can be that guy, and we really don't have any idea if we're going to see it again.
All right, now here's my follow-up question. Did anything change in those final 8 weeks, Sam? You guys look at the tape. You get all the ins and outs more so than I've had a chance to do, or even Paul here so far. Did the Dolphins change the way they used him? I know Cameron Wake got hurt. He wasn't on the field the last half of the season. Do you think that had a factor? Is there anything different about his utilization, about his style of play, or did he just simply play better?
No, there really wasn't much difference in terms of how they deployed him or how they used him. It's not like he, you know, moved sides and became a different player, was a different role in the defense. as soon as Cameron Wake went down, that did seem to have a definite effect. I'm not entirely sure what the connection is. You know, maybe the pressure or the being the guy that had to be the number one pass rush threat for the defense inspired him in a way that he just wasn't when he was only second fiddle to a guy like Wake and a guy like Sue. But as soon as Wake went down, it was like a light came on, and Vernon just decided, you know what, I'm better than these guys. I can go out and really destroy people. I can show them that I am this elite pass rushing edge defender. And he just took his game to a completely different level. So I'm not entirely sure what the connection is between Wake going down and him suddenly playing like an all pro, but there appears to be some kind of connection between the two of them, because it was almost like a switch was flipped when that happened.
Now with Sue there, and this is my last question on Vernon, then I'll pass you off to Paul, Sam. Did Vernon get a lot of double teams? Did he get chipped a lot? How much extra help did left tackles get trying to deal with him? Or because of Sue's presence, did he get a lot of single teams out there on the outside?
I don't think that a defensive tackle actually influences a defensive end or an edge rusher that much in those terms. I don't think there are many teams that will take help away from an edge defender and give it to a defensive tackle, give it to a guy trying to block a defensive tackle. It's one of those things that I think gets thrown around as a kind of logical connection, but I don't think it actually has that much of an effect.
Good answer.
I don't think Vernon actually did see, you know, wasn't double-teamed too much, didn't get too much help. So if he does, even if he comes back this year and plays exactly as he left off last season, the production will probably go down overall because teams will give more of that attention to him.
Interesting.
There'll be more chip blocks coming his way. There'll be more double teams from tight ends. But I don't think leaving Sue is going to make a big difference either way.
Got it.
I'd like to ask you, Sam, about the Giants' new defensive tackle. I mean, Snacks Harrison, I mean, I only watched the film on him when they were coming in to play the Giants. I shouldn't say coming in, same building. But when they played the Giants last year, it's the only film I watched on him all season long to really study him. The critics will say he's really only a two-down run-stuffing player and that, you know, that's really what he's about. And the Giants obviously made him a big-ticket item. Maybe they overshot. Other people will say, wow, he's big, he's strong, he's a force. He could probably play more than just being a two-down guy. So what do your numbers and your stat counts say about what Harrison's all about?
So Harrison may be the best run-defending player in the NFL, regardless of position. He, I think, has led the league in the last two seasons in terms of run-stop percentage, so the percentage of defensive snaps in which they're making a stop in the run game. This past season, he was so far off the chart in terms of how far ahead of the rest of the league he was in that area, it was just ridiculous.
Wow.
So he's consistently one of the best run stuffers in the NFL. And every single year, he's been so good at that the Jets have tried to ramp up his snaps and tried to get him on the field for more downs, to get him on in passing downs and see if he can do a bit more. And he just hasn't really responded. I mean, he's never had a positive pass rushing grade for us. This past season was a high in terms of total snaps, passing down snaps. And he got, I think, 14 total pressures, just one sack. So he just doesn't really offer anything as a pass rusher. I don't think he's necessarily a liability there. He's not terrible at it. It's just that you're not gonna expect much pressure from him if he's out there on passing downs. You know, maybe given how much money the Giants have paid him, you can still have him out there and he can be part of the four-man line, but that's not where the pressure is going to be coming from. You know, at best, you're going to be hoping that he can push the pocket a bit and kind of force things to other people to clean up. It's just not really where his strength lies.
Now, Sam, you know, usually we talk about a team getting an average of about 65 snaps a game. I don't know if you have his page up from your stats, but how many snaps are we talking about over the last 2 years, average-wise, he plays in a game, being that he's a run-stuffing guy?
Yeah, last year was a career high in terms of the percentage of team total snaps he played, and he was up at 53.7 snaps, or 53.7% of the defensive snaps.
Okay.
So that was the first year of his career that he's been above 50% at all.
Wow.
And that topped out at 53.7. So, like I say, he's not been a guy that's been on the field that much. They've tried to increase the workload they give him, and I just don't think that he offers enough as a pass rusher for them to really ramp it up.
All right, so now if he's about a 35-snap-a-game guy, then clearly the Giants do have to have that rotation going, because maybe Jay Bromley is a guy who takes some of those other snaps away. You know Hankins is going to be in there for sure.
Well, you know, Paul, and I think that's what I want to ask Sam. How does this move, Sam, you think affect Hankins? Because that's a guy that did play some of that one technique. He's a big guy. How do you project him moving out to that three technique spot at tackle? Can he do it? Can he give you enough pressure from that spot to play alongside Harrison? We know they can stop the run in those two spots, but can they create enough inside pressure and penetration if they're together there in the middle of that defensive line on first and second down?
I think that's a big question. You know, we've seen Jonathan Hankins has basically been the same kind of player for most of his career as Damon Harrison has. In 2014, he actually had a pretty good pass rushing season as well, with the sacks that he
Real
had that year and a lot of pressure. But that's really the only season we've seen him do that in. Both the other seasons, he's been really strong in run defense and hasn't really brought an awful lot as a pass rusher. So it's an interesting gamble, because they're now going to be putting in Harrison there in that one tech spot, taking out Hankins, and we don't really know if he can do that. We've seen it once. We haven't seen it two other seasons. I think it's a big gamble to put him out there and expect that his play won't drop off. You know, we'll see if he can do it. I honestly am not sure if he can.
See, I don't know if Spags wants to go to a pass-rushing front four, the NASCAR or whatever you want to call it. I'm not so sure that right now he's got the ability to move his ends inside the defensive tackle.
No, I don't think he does.
I'm not sure that he does, especially if Cullen Jenkins doesn't resign, because Cullen's one of those guys who does play inside and out. Mm-hmm. I don't know right now that he can do that unless they move JPP inside, and I don't think you want to do that.
Yeah, Sam, I guess that the follow-up question that I think, Sam, do you think there's anybody else on this roster currently,
yeah,
or maybe some lower-end guys in free agency that you think they can bring in to add to that pass rush rotation? If you have to take Hankins and Harrison off the field in passing situations, like you suggest might be the case, who are some of the guys out there that are available, or do you think – there are some back-end guys on the roster currently that can't fill that
Jay
role.
Jay Bromley might have to be that guy.
The guy I think that really stands out that's still out there on the open market, I think, is Nick Fairley. And Nick Fairley, for his, you know, all his faults, has still been a really good player. He's still graded exceptionally well, and he slimmed down a lot in St. Louis and, you know, looked like a defensive end at times. I think he's a perfect guy that could do that sort of three-tech role on base downs, you know, maybe even play outside on some base downs, and definitely be that interior pass rusher and disruptive player in the sub-packages and in nickel defense and in that kind of NASCAR-type package. I think the Giants at the moment definitely inside look a bit light in terms of pressure. There's no one there that's scaring teams in terms of bringing that pass rush. So a guy like Fairley, if he could, I don't know, it's always difficult to know at this point in free agency whether guys that are still out there are wanting too much money or whether it's just a lack of interest. You know,
sure,
we don't know whether Fairley wants big dollars, so he's still out in the open market, or if there just aren't that many teams chasing him. If it's the latter, if he's still out there because there just isn't the interest, I think he'd be a great guy to bring in.
Well, you know, I think the interesting part about Cullen Jenkins, and we just mentioned him a moment ago, is that, you know, he may or may not be back, and he, of course, could help the Giants out a little bit in that regard because he did a lot of flip-flopping. Let me stick with defense with you, Sam. What about Janoris Jenkins, who's a big play guy, a gambler? I'd like to know what your numbers say about him.
Well, Janoris Jenkins is a big play guy, but it's in both directions.
Exactly.
You know, he'll make interceptions. He'll knock down passes. But he's given up 22 touchdowns since he's been in the NFL, which only two different corners have given up more over the same time span. You know, he's being paid like one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, but Darrelle Revis and Richard Sherman combined over that same period have only given up 16. So this is a guy who does make mistakes and makes big mistakes that cost touchdowns. So it really is a boom or bust kind of guy. And it's interesting because I think Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie is almost a similar kind of player. So the Giants are loading up with this group of guys that will make a whole bunch of big plays, but will also blow some plays and cost them games. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, where the balance lies there. Because those two, I think, will both win them games and cost them games next season.
Now, Sam, reading your stuff, though, you did see some improvement from Jenkins in his fourth year, where he did take some fewer chances and was a little bit more disciplined. Is that true?
I think he still made some mistakes, but overall, down to down, he was definitely a better player last season than we've seen from him before. But there was still, you know, you don't need to go far into the tape to find some bad plays from his last season, some big plays that cost touchdowns.
You know what I wonder, though, Sam, and I guess we won't know that until we actually see him at camp. When you're playing for a Rams team that really hasn't done much in a long, long time, don't you have to be a gambler to make big plays? Because the truth of the matter is, that team needed the spark. I mean, to me, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing everything I can to get that team, you know, out of the doldrums of what they were. And I, maybe I can't blame a guy for being a gambler in that regard. You know
you
what
do.
I'm saying?
I think only some of these plays, only some of the bad plays are gambling. You know, some of them are plays where he's gambled, tried to make a play, and has made the wrong read, or he's just, you know, been beaten by a guy who's seen the gamble and gone to the other option. But some of them are just bad plays. You
okay.
know, some of them are where he's just made a mistake in coverage. He's read something wrong, or he's done the wrong thing, and he's just blown the play. You know, there was one last season where he just got manhandled by Anquan Boldin for a touchdown late. I think that was the last game of the season. That was a bad play. There was one earlier against Washington where he just got out physical at the point of attack in the end zone. I think Pierre Garçon just did him, and he was looking for a pass interference play that clearly was never going to come. So, you know, some of Janoris's bad play is definitely gambling, but some of it is just, you know, poor play. It's plays that a guy who is as talented as he is shouldn't be making at this point in his
career.
Watch
for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Sam, I got a follow-up on that, too. How much was Jenkins helped when he was in St. Louis by the impressive nature of that pass rush? We all know how much cornerbacks are helped by the fact that the defensive line can get to the quarterback unbalanced and make them rush throws and, you know, do things like that. You had Robert Quinn, they had Aaron Donald, a bunch of guys that can get to the quarterback. Was his job made a little bit easier there because of that pass rush? And how do you think that affected his overall quality of his play and also how he played the position with him maybe assuming that the defensive line is going to get to the quarterback pretty quick?
It's an interesting relationship that you know, cornerbacks and pass rush have because, you know, the more a pressure a team gets, the quicker the ball is going to come out on average. But you can't necessarily rely on it down to down. And when you look at the numbers, it doesn't actually tend to affect how well a cornerback plays coverage, you know, because the ball is going to come out on average faster if you've got a really good pass rush up front. But you're not sure when those plays are going to be, and you still have to be in good position when it happens. You know, the ball is going to come at you quicker, but it doesn't necessarily help you be in the right spot at the right time. So it's definitely an interesting situation. But Richard Sherman always got that kind of criticism. But when you looked at the numbers, he was actually one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL the longer the ball took to come out. You know, he was at his best when the pass rush wasn't helping him out at all and when there was no pressure on the play. So it doesn't necessarily follow that quality pass rush is going to help out a corner and make his life easier.
See, that's why I ask those types of questions. Sometimes the numbers, you know, take those little colloquialisms and throw them out the window. I like it.
Sam, I got an offensive question for you. I don't know how much more time we have with you, but one of our Twitter people watching and listening to the show is asking about Anquan Boldin. You mentioned him before in terms of he outmuscled Jenkins on a touchdown catch at the end of last season. He's an available free agent right now out there on the street, and it is clear that the Giants do need to fortify depth at the wide receiver position. From what you guys saw, does Boldin have much left in his tank? Is he a guy that could come in here and be a two or a three?
Well, the great thing about Boldin is that he never had any speed to lose in the beginning, you know? So he's gotten old, he's lost a couple of steps. It doesn't matter. He wasn't running away from anyone to start with.
Yes,
so
indeed.
He's a guy that can definitely still play as a possession receiver. You know, if you've got a guy out there with speed, and the Giants obviously do, he can be a two and a three. He's definitely got a space on a team's depth chart. He can still get it done as a role player in the NFL. He did it for San Francisco last year, and they hardly had great quarterbacking situation. So, yeah, I think he's definitely a guy worth looking at.
All right, I got a couple more quickies for you. We should ask you about Keenan Robinson, the Giants' new linebacker, Sam. I know he's had some injury issues in the past. How do you guys view him? Is he more of a coverage guy, a run-stopping guy? Can he play all three downs? What's your take on Keenan Robinson?
Yeah, I mean, he's never earned a particularly good grade at PFF. His run defense has always been bad. His pass coverage has been less bad. So I think this is one of those ones where it's it's depth and it's not a particularly expensive contract, but I would be surprised if Keenan Robinson ended up being anything particularly spectacular.
All right, the Giants still looking for help at a couple other key spots I want to touch on with you in free agency. One is the safety position. I'll let Paul handle right tackle because he's all about the offensive line. I'll start with safety. I think it's pretty obvious, Sam, based on the numbers last year, the Giants needed some help in the middle of the field, especially at the safety position, to give their rookie Landon Collins some veteran leadership help and, frankly, some coverage out there. A lot of the guys are gone. Gibson's off the board. Eric Weddle signed.
McLeod's
off the board. You have a guy like Reggie Nelson left. What do you think about him? But even more so, that's the name everyone knows. Give us some names that maybe fans aren't that familiar with that could come in here and provide some coverage from the safety position to play next to Landon Collins.
Yeah, it's not a great list in terms of who's left. I do like Reggie Nelson. I think he's been a good player for the Bengals for the past couple of years, and he's good in all facets of the game. He's been a pretty good coverage guy. He's been pretty good against the run. He's definitely a guy that's still playing well and would be worth looking at. The other guy I've always liked is Hussein Abdullah, who from Kansas City this year has always played. He's always graded really well for us whenever he's been out there. But almost every place he's been, the team hasn't really trusted him to be that starter, to be the guy that will play 1,000 snaps and stay out there every down. But in terms of how he's played when he's been on the field, he's always been an impressive player. And then the other guy I think that probably leaps to mind is Rashad Johnson. He's a guy worth looking at, I think. But when you're getting down to that stage, it's getting pretty tough looking for help. Actually, Walter Thurman for the Eagles last season played very well, being converted to safety from corner.
Yeah, Thurman's an interesting guy for me because you could always use him to double as the slot corner in certain situations.
If you have to,
if you need to. Absolutely. So I kind of have my eye on him right now based on who's left. Offensive line before you go, Sam, the best run-blocking tackle that's still out there on the board, according to your numbers. I'd be curious to see who that is.
And if you have anybody that's not going to cost an arm and a leg, too, that would also help.
Yeah, we're kind of looking at the discount rack right now, Sam.
I think part of the problem is that you can't be sure what you're going to get with a lot of these guys. You know, they've either got injury concerns or they've had a bad year recently. I think Donald Penn is still playing pretty well. If you can get him a short-term deal, he's a guy that's still been playing extremely well. Andre Smith is a guy who once was playing really well as a right tackle for the Bengals, but the last couple of seasons he's just been getting progressively worse. So it's difficult to know what you're going to get out of him. If you could guarantee that you're getting the 2012 version of Andre Smith, you'd have arguably the best right tackle in the NFL. But the 2015 version was not that guy.
Right.
And the one last thing I want to touch on with you, Sam. And fantastic information, great stuff. I think our fans really got educated listening to your spot with us today. The draft right now, number 10, the Giants are going there. They kind of filled out a lot of their dire needs in free agency, which is what you want to do. Where do you see there being some value at 10 for the Giants? Do you see a guy like, you know, Hargreaves, who could maybe be that third slot corner the Giants still need? Do you like somebody on the offensive line, maybe a receiver if they can't find that second guy in free agency because that list is pretty short? You know, where do you see number 10 there being some decent value for the Giants when they pick in the first round of the draft?
This is a really interesting draft because I think there's a kind of top five group of guys that separate themselves from everywhere else.
Yeah, we
and
agree.
Then there's almost like a hole. And then from like 10 to the bottom of the first round, these guys are almost all interchangeable. You know, you can move guys depending on the kind of scheme you like or depending on traits you like, but you could move guys left, right, and center and get what you want. I think the Giants could be in a pretty good position at 10, depending on what they're targeting. You know, guys like you could probably get the best wide receiver in the draft at 10. You may get the best cornerback in the draft, depending on, you know, what you view Jalen Ramsey as. But potentially, whether you prefer William Jackson, the cornerback from Houston, or Mackenzie Alexander from Clemson, or Vernon Hargreaves, one of those guys is likely to be there at 10. So I think there's a lot of value at that spot. It's just a case of identifying the kind of guy you think is the best fit for your scheme.
You know, it's funny you mentioned wide receiver real quick. I know most people seem to think Laquon Treadwell is the best receiver in the draft. I know you disagree based on reading your stuff the last couple of weeks. Give me your take on that. And then also, is there a guy in free agency still out there that could be a wide receiver number two?
Yeah, we think Corey Coleman is actually the best receiver in this draft, the wide receiver from Baylor. Baylor runs an absolutely ridiculous offense in terms of trying to project to the NFL. Corey Coleman, he had 116 targets last year, and I think 74 of them were on hitches and go routes, nothing else. So if you look at his targets that weren't either hitches, goes, slants, or screens, he was only targeted 12 times on anything else. So you're literally completely projecting how you think he will do running an NFL route tree. But everything he does at Baylor is fantastic. You know, other than a few drops that are a little frustrating, he just does so much extremely well that I think you have to like what he can do at the next level. It really wasn't a good wide receiver class in free agency. I think there weren't that many receivers at the start of it that could be number two. I think there's pretty much no chance of that now.
Right.
Sam, great stuff. We can't thank you enough. We'll talk to you and your guys over there as we get closer to the draft. Thanks for being patient. Thanks for giving us the time. And we'll talk to you soon. All right, pal?
Always fun, Sam.
No
thank
problem.
You.
That's
anytime,
Sam
guys.
Monson, Pro Football Focus. What a wonderful job.
You know, it's funny because, John, so much goes into evaluating a player, and the analytics, of course, have become a bigger part of that in recent years. I still believe in the eye test the most.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I love the fact that, for example, he was able to give us snap numbers and count numbers on Harrison.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I certainly don't have the ability to do that. I can look at all the film I want. I don't have those numbers.
Yeah, but you can't spend – even you can't spend the week counting snaps.
No, I can't. I mean, that's just too much. You know, I'd have to go back into all the NFL play-by-plays and start looking at each and every one of them and go through them all. I mean, that's just crazy. So those numbers can be valuable and certainly can be a big part of the equation. So I'm very very grateful, you know, that they do those kinds of things.
Well, how about his thing on Sherman where they said he was the best cover corner the longer the quarterback held the football?
Now,
that's fascinating.
That knocks me for a loop.
Well, again, you would assume he gets an advantage. And, yeah, sure, it helps him that he doesn't have to cover as long on most plays, but on the players he does have to cover a long time, he's still the top corner in the league.
Wow.
That, to me, is fascinating. And I love that.
I agree. Anyway, we move on.
And you know what, though? It's funny, and we see you guys lining up to take your calls, and we'll take your calls in a second. You know, what he said on the draft, and I don't want to depress Giant fans, but I think that's a point that I would start to hammer home at the combine, and I'm going to start hammering it home again. I think you're looking at
the handful of elites.
You're looking at Bosa. You're looking at Miles Jack. You're looking at Jalen Ramsey. You're looking at Laremy Tunsil. And if you want to throw DeForest Buckner in there, too, depending if you play 3-4 or 4-3, you could throw him into the top group, too. You know, depending on how you value running backs, maybe Ezekiel Elliott's in that group. But then, what's next?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and the Giants are 10, so they're not getting any of those top five.
You wouldn't think. Unless, you know, even if three quarterbacks go in the top 10, you wouldn't think one of those guys, by some freak chance, will drop to 10. But again, you might have the opportunity to get the best corner. You are probably going to have the opportunity to get the best wide receiver if you want to go in that direction. You might have the opportunity to get the best defensive tackle, depending on how
possibly.
You see Buckner.
Possibly.
So they'll have an opportunity to get a really good player.
Yeah,
and they're going to have their
no
choice of guys. But, you know, I think you can kind of take that handful of guys we just mentioned and push them off to the side and say, you know what, I don't think it's going to work out for one of those five.
You know, and the good news is, outside of Tunsil, who is universally regarded as the best offensive lineman.
And by the way, I say best corner. I'm considering Ramsey a safety corner hybrid, not a true corner, which is why I'm not putting him in that group.
Right.
Right.
And I'm fine with that. But you know, we were talking about this yesterday with Lance, and I mentioned him last week. You know, Stanley out of Notre Dame.
Oh, Ronnie Stanley
is
could be in that group.
Very,
too. Yeah.
Very highly thought after offensive tackle. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to cry if the Giants pick him at 10.
Seen from what I understand, and I have my Notre Dame tape, I haven't watched it yet, more of a finesse left tackle pass protector than that mauling run blocker you're looking for. The Conklin kid out of Michigan State, I understand, is more of that mauling type of run blocking right tackle.
Agreed. The only thing, though, about Stanley, I love his technique. He's very clean, very smart, doesn't make mistakes.
Is he a senior?
You know what? I don't know.
I'm not sure either.
But when you watch him, he's fundamentally very, very sound.
And if you did that, would you plug him into left tackle and move Flowers to the right side, or would in Stanley's rookie you put him out on the right side?
No, I think it's easier to come in as a rookie to be the right tackle.
I agree with that.
So I would put Stanley at right tackle. I think he is big enough and strong enough that he can handle it. You're right. I usually want the bigger, mauler, you know, mountainous type of guy over there if at all possible. But when you are as solid in your technique as Stanley is, you're that technically sound, that allows you to play, quote, bigger than you are because you're so sharp with your technique. It's guys who are a little bit sloppy with their technique who have to rely on the bigger, bulkier, stronger mass because, guess what? They're making mistakes out there, and they need the physicality to try to overcome them.
And by the way, I want to promo tomorrow. We're going to start doing our specific college spots as these pro days happen. The Ohio State Pro Day just went down. So we're going to start our Pro Day features where we talk to a writer or someone that covers each one of the college teams that have some of the top prospects attend that school. That'll start tomorrow. And much to Dan Salamone's delight, what school better to start with than the school that has perhaps could set a record for the most first-round picks in a given year, and that's the Ohio State Buckeyes. So tomorrow we'll be joined by Bill Rabinowitz from the Dispatch out there in Columbus, and he'll be joining us to talk about Ohio State football. So
they
that should be a lot of
12 guys in the NFL next year.
He actually wrote a great book.
Right.
He collaborated with Urban Meyer to write a book called The Chase.
Cool.
On Ohio State's national championship season. So he's very familiar with all the players on Ohio State, and he'll probably even be able to give us something on Noah Spence, who was there before he went to Eastern Kentucky.
I'm sure he can. There's a lot to say about him.
Yeah, so we got Bosa, Eli Apple, Ezekiel Elliott. The list goes on and on. You got the linebacker kid, Lee. You got the defensive tackle, Jaron Reed.
Even their tight end's not bad.
And they have a wide receiver that could go in the second round as well. So there's a lot of guys coming out of Ohio State.
Yeah, this is going to be it's good. That's a good kickoff guy to have.
Yeah,
for sure.
So we'll start with Lance and I tomorrow. We'll get him, and then we'll kind of. I have a running list of about 15 to 20 schools I think we can do between now and the start of the draft. So
we have time.
That'll be a lot of fun. All right, here we go. You guys have held long enough. You've been patient. We thank you for that. It's your calls the rest of the way at 201-939-4513. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. It's as simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Fantasy Baseball is getting started. The magazines are on the rack. The preparation has begun. Yankee and Met preseason baseball on MSG and SN, on SNY. I always like when the preseason baseball starts. It kind of gets you in that spring mood, despite the fact it's dipped back into the upper 30s and low 40s here.
And that's the signal for me to get into tape study. Draft prospects full speed ahead, baby.
Here we go. Marco in Connecticut will lead us off on the phones. Marco, thanks for waiting, pal. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Great spot as always. Good job.
Thanks, Marco. What's up?
I haven't been able to call in since free agency started, so I have a bunch of thoughts, and then if you guys feel free to interrupt and jump in on anything.
Sure.
One thing that I want to start with is I thought, there's a lot of talk about the Giants overspent on these guys, but you guys have mentioned it, and I don't think this gets played out nationally too much, which, hey, I guess – what do we really care? But it would be nice if they were kind of saying the right thing. The money that we had in some degree had to get spent. So I'm happy that it got spent on the right type of players at the right age, which I love. I love that these guys are younger. And I think that it was best to spend the money in the areas that they did. The cap's going to go up, like people keep saying. So I think this might become something that we become accustomed to. Not maybe three teams having a lot of money, but it gets spread around a little bit more. I think how the Giants develop going forward, like this draft, I think, is the most important draft we've had in years, because I almost look at our free agency like we got somewhat of a clean slate, and we were able to go out and handpick some young players at big-time positions. I mean, when do you ever get a 25-year-old pass rusher in free agency? I mean, that's so rare.
Here's me the bottom line, and I'll let you finish. But I think in the draft the last few years, you've seen the Giants build what I would call the foundation of their offense. They've drafted three offensive linemen.
Yeah.
They drafted Odell Beckham Jr. They've brought in Shane Vereen. They've re-signed Victor Cruz. You know, that's worked out, obviously, with the injuries. Everyone knows that. Mm-hmm. But that's the foundation of the offense to go with Eli Manning. This free agency period, to me, is the start of building the foundation of the defense. If you want to go back to DRC, last year you drafted Landon Collins and Owe. They'll be a part of this. But then, look, Janoris Jenkins, Snacks Harrison, Olivier Vernon, and re-signing JPP. These are going to be the stars of your defense for the next two or three years. This is it. If these guys play well, your defense will be great. If they don't play well, your defense is not going to be good. So these are the guys, and you're right. They almost had a clean slate. This is how they're building it. These are the guys. This is it. And we'll see how they play moving forward.
To prove that point more succinctly or to state it, the Giants are all in with this group of guys.
Yes.
There is no halfway here.
For the next 3 years,
this is it.
This is the deal.
This is it.
This is the deal.
These guys will work or these guys will not work. So
and Marco,
well.
You're
it.
Right. And I think to your first point, the Giants would rather not be in a situation where they had all this money to spend and you had to get it all in 1 year and it's 50 and you got to spend it. You know, if they would prefer to go back, they would have loved for Hakeem Nicks to stay healthy and they could have signed a second contract. They would have loved for other guys to have worked out and they were re-signed and here for a long time. But they were in the situation they were in. You can lament that or you can just deal with it and move forward. And with the resources they had, they signed three guys either in their prime or going into their prime in their mid-20s that were the best guys available with the most upside. And I think that's the best they could have done given the situation they were in. And if it means overspending, if the players are really good, no one's going to care. Now, if they're not real good, it's going to stink.
Yep.
But you hope they're really good, and if they are, if you pay a really good player an extra $5 to $10 million, people will live with it, and they'll forget about it, and they're not going to care.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just to go on that with this draft, that's why I'm calling this draft the most important one in a long time that we remember, because you got to look at Eli's window, and if this is Eli's career, let's say he's entering the fourth quarter, and by no means is he past his prime, but I think this is what you need to look at. There's a window here. Go out and continue the success from free agency. So here's what I'm thinking for the draft. I think just listening to you guys, I think at number 10, you have the choice here to pick the best player available, or you could put the hammer down on certain positions that you've already established on your team. And what I mean by that is you have Beckham at wide receiver. Do you put the hammer down and draft who you think is the best wide receiver in the draft? And then you are solidified at the wide receiver position. Or you could look at the same at O-line. We have three franchise players at offensive line. Do you put the hammer down and draft a Ronnie Stanley and maybe copy off a little bit of what Dallas has done and say, hey, offensive line, we are solid now going forward.
Yeah, but Marco, here's the beauty of it. And I think what you're saying is exactly right. And that's why you can pick the best player available. And I think that's what free agency has done, in that there's really only one position where I'll say the Giants are set. And they don't need any help. That's quarterback.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you want to go in there and say, I want an every down running back in Ezekiel Elliott, that's not my first choice or Paul's first choice, but I get it. And it's going to help the team.
Yeah.
If they pick the best wide receiver, I get it. It'll help the team. If you want to pick a third cornerback to go with Kamardie and Jenkins to be your slot guy, I get it. That's going to help your team. If you want to pick another pass rusher to be in that rotation so you can move JPP inside on third downs, you know what? I get it. That works. So I think you do pick the best available player, because now you're in a situation where whomever you pick can lock down any number of positions on the roster, and it works.
That's exactly how I feel about this, Marco. I'm sorry. I'm not looking at position. I'm saying at number 10, get me a bona fide Pro Bowl caliber impact player, and I don't care what position he plays.
And at 10, there's no guarantee you get that guy, because I guarantee you between picks 8 and 20 in this draft, when all is said and done, out of those 12 players, maybe 3 to 5 will be consistent Pro Bowlers. The key is to find one of those 3 to 5.
Yeah.
One. I have a question, and then I'll get off. I know it's taking a while, but as we get closer to the draft, just my prediction: when it gets closer, and then free agencies kind of dwindle down, I think more and more you're going to see need and value make sense for a cornerback, someone that could could move from the slot and the and outside position. There's no one right now that could play slot on the team. I don't know if Trevin Wade could. I don't even know if, what his contract status is. But if there's someone you can get at 10, and I don't – I love Jalen Ramsey, but there's no one else I really love there. But I think as we get – free agency is going to dwindle out. Paul, you're going to get your offensive line in somewhere, I think. And there'll be some type of wide receiver that's brought in. But I think corner is going to be the position that really sticks out at people.
I'm inclined, to be perfectly honest with you, to agree that that's the way it may shake out.
So am I. Though
yeah.
I've seen Hargreaves off the board here at 8 or 9 in a couple
Don't keep taking my guys.
Okay.
He loves when my guys get taken.
Thank you,
Mark. Giants pick.
I appreciate
he loves it.
By the way, we already started scheduling when we're going to do our mock draft, so I already have a setup which guys aren't going to be there for you. There will be no Stanley and there will be no Hargreaves.
Yeah,
so goodbye.
You know, and
bye-bye. You can say goodbye.
You're going to take Shaq Lawson off my board too?
I might leave Shaq there for you. I got to see how good I feel about it. Of course, your board will be the one where nobody picks a quarterback in the top 10. Because that's what I do to you.
I know. Of course you do.
All right, let's go to Rod in Virginia. He's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live presented by DraftKings. Rod, thanks for calling in. How are you, buddy?
Hey, guys. Hey, I got a couple things I just want to throw out there.
Sure.
About the draft, I heard what Marco was talking about, and I heard what Paul was saying about how we need a Pro Bowler that can come out and play. And to me, the biggest position right now is safety, just – safety and corner, and that whole secondary just needs to be revamped. And with the whole signing of Janoris Jenkins, I think that really started the revamping of it. And we just need somebody who can stop, that can just stop on third down when we need it. Because I think we only got blown out like 3 times or 2 times during the whole season. So I think they said that would have put our record at like 11-5 or like 10-6. I think it was something like that.
Okay, now understand this, though.
Games where we had the lead.
If you draft secondary, remember, rookie defensive backs make rookie mistakes, and you do pay for those. So do you want to go with a veteran in the secondary? Do you want to sign a veteran safety or a veteran corner, or do you want to draft them?
Because after what happened with the Patriots game and – Landon Moss and everyone's like, oh, he didn't have to jump and get the ball. You know, rookies are going to make rookie mistakes, like you said. So I'd rather have a veteran safety to teach Landon Collins the way of.
So you're on board with what we're talking about.
And I would like to have, and I like the cornerbacks that we have right now are pretty good. I wish we could have picked up on Prince, though, and really have our corners set there and. But I'd rather get and everything else is good. It's looking up with the sign of Robinson, that linebacker. So I think the only thing we really need right now is a safety and maybe a number 3 guy, because Cruz will always be number 2. I don't know why everybody's saying number 2. Like, Cruz isn't there, man, but I love my man Cruz. So when he gets healthy and comes back, I'm looking forward for him and Beckham to just get together and just run corners crazy, because I saw on ESPN, they said in 2014 when Beckham and Cruz were on the field together, Eli didn't throw one interception. I think he threw 6 touchdowns.
Well, they were on the field for like a game and a half, though.
Yeah, but
six
quarters. Statistics. Numbers are numbers.
That's true.
You guys are numbers.
You guys are just talking 10
That's
minutes
great.
Ago how the numbers mean everything, man. So don't tell me my numbers, though. How old are you? I'm 16, but I'm a diehard Giants.
Well, Rod, you're a good fan.
Stuff.
You know your stuff. I appreciate the call. Thanks for listening. We hope to hear from you again. All right, bud?
I would add to the Victor Cruz comment. Did you see the picture he posted on his Instagram?
I can't keep track of Victor Cruz's social media.
Someone had showed it to me. Someone had sent it to me.
It is true. When I want social media information, that's the guy I go to.
Never.
Instagram.
Never.
Facebook.
But the point. The
Snapchat.
The point is.
Tatino loves it.
He was doing. Oh. He was with some kind of weights doing a lower body workout with some heavy duty weights, and it looked like he was really getting into it. So, hey, anything Victor Cruz does.
You should invite him on one of your walks.
Yeah, right? I could help him out with that. Anything Victor Cruz does, though, that doesn't set him back is good.
But once one of your walks, people won't be running in the opposite direction. They might actually be trying to come up to you instead of fleeing your path. Final call of the show. By the way, fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. JD in North Carolina. JD, how are you?
Great, guys. John, P-Dot, thanks for taking my call.
Wrap up the show for us, JD. What do you got? The floor is yours.
I want to say that was a really, really informative interview. As usual, you guys get some really great guests, and we typically get a lot of insight that we would normally be able to get.
Thank you.
So I definitely enjoyed that one.
Cool.
A few comments on some of the points that he had made with Jonathan Hankins. He had said that he thinks it's a concern as far as what he's able to bring to the table with the pass rush. Personally, I don't think that's going to be an issue. We've seen Jonathan Hankins be able to penetrate on a consistent basis. He pretty much lives in the backfield when he's playing and he's healthy.
JD, be fair about this. In 2014, he was a monster. I thought he had a Pro Bowl caliber season. I thought he was simply sensational against the run and against the pass. But to be fair, last year before he got hurt, I thought was a step back.
Hankins? He certainly did not play as well in year three as he did in year two.
He did not. He did not play as well against the run. He definitely did not get nearly the pass rush or the penetration that we're talking about.
He was an impact player in 2014.
Yes.
He was not an impact player, to my eyes, in the first half of 2014.
So, to be fair, JD, what I'm saying is,
he definitely didn't put up the same numbers, and he was hurt as well. He didn't play the whole season, but he also wasn't playing along the same line that he was in 2014 either.
Also
obviously,
true.
You know,
also true.
High tide raises all ships, and when you've got compromised quality along the line and injuries, everybody's stats are going to go down a little bit. But if you look at the way he plays, I mean, I don't think there's any question that he's got the capability to do that.
No
especially
question.
With a guy like Harrison next to him now. Hankins was having to take on a lot of double teams, which I think was also contributing to his lack of pass rush, because he wasn't giving the same opportunity to pass rush as he was when he's the big guy on the D line taking up the double team.
Do love his skill set, JD. I agree with you, but at this moment, he's now in the show me category because I need to see again, Jonathan Hankins. I need to see that you're an impact player. Show me that you're not just an okay guy. Show me you're an impact guy like you were 2 years ago. Show me. I want to see.
Can't argue with that. And then one point that he made that I actually agreed with was about Keenan Robinson. I think the guy on paper has got all the ability in the world, but I can't imagine that the Giants are going to rely on a guy who hasn't played 16 games yet to be their starting middle linebacker, especially coming off the situation we just had with Jonathan Beeson. You know, again, a guy with all the talent in the world, but just couldn't stay healthy for us. So I think he's a great insurance policy. And if you look at the contract, you know, it's a no-risk situation for the Giants. You got a guy who's got potentially could be the middle linebacker if he stays healthy and he performs. But if he doesn't, it's not going to hurt them financially. However, I don't think they're going to rely on him as the middle linebacker going into next season.
So who's the guy?
I don't think he's on the team yet. I think they're going to bring in somebody either with the remaining free agency or possibly in the draft. There's definitely been talk of a couple of linebackers who might be worthy of a first-round or a second-round draft pick. I could play middle.
You know, Ragland's about the only guy to me that you could sniff at 10 who could be available, because I think
a
lot of people...
To play the middle, yes. I agree with that.
It's not a good deep middle linebacker draft, and if you look at the list of free agents, John had them up before, I thought, it's real thin. I mean, that's like Laurinaitis, to me, was the best name out there, and behind him, there's not a whole lot.
Oh, sure. It's not an ideal situation, but I just based on Keenan Robinson and his career so far, and
he
again,
may
with the
be the best you can get your hands on,
recently,
JD.
I don't think they're going to rely on him.
You may not have a choice.
Not hand the job to him.
Look, Harry Carson's here once a week during the season doing a television show, but I can't get him on the field.
Well, you can always bring back a guy like Brinkley, too, to be your backup in case Robinson gets hurt. And we saw, you know, he did yeoman's work last year. He, you know, he's not going to make any Pro Bowls, but he's a good guy to have there for depth.
I agree
in the middle,
with that.
And that's fine.
I'd like to see him back.
Right. All right,
definitely.
JD.
And then as far as the remaining question marks on the roster, I want to see how you guys would prioritize. I think the biggest ones remaining are obviously, you know, it's at safety. There's no nickel corner or really, quote-unquote, third wide receiver right now. And then depending on what your opinion is of Bobby Hart, you might be looking at having to bring in a right guard and a right tackle, again, depending on where you sit with him. So I want to see what your guys' thoughts were in prioritizing the remaining holes on the roster.
Okay.
All right, JD, thanks for the call, man. I mean, look, I think given, and we've talked about this before, I would say, in our opinion at least, and we don't know what they're thinking upstairs, I think the veteran safety or the right tackle for me would be 1 and 2.
For me, it is.
I think the third corner would probably be number 3 for me on that list, in my opinion, and that's how I would rank it. There are some guys out there that, you know, have played nickel corner that are still free agents, Brandon Boykin being one of them. He is not signed anywhere yet. And like Paul said, young defensive backs tend to make mistakes, and mistakes by defensive backs tend to turn into big plays. That's just the way it goes. That's the life in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It's like that for everybody that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep that in mind. Rankins, a kid out of Louisville, our buddy Ben on Twitter, thinks that would be a good choice. Emmanuel Ogba, actually, is another guy that's been flying up the boards. And he's a true 4-3 defensive end, boy, 6'4", about 275, at Okie State.
Yep.
He's a guy, and he had real good combine numbers. I know you love those combine numbers, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's somebody that is moving up boards and could be a spot there. Who brought him up? New York Giants blood at Robert Jordan, 92. Also likes Darren Lee, the weak side linebacker. I think 10 might be a little high for him, but I know a lot of people think he could be a Ryan Shazier type of player, be that good, that Lee kid out of Ohio State.
But, you know, my issue is when he's talking about the middle and he's saying, well, you know, don't bank on Robinson. Well, I understand that, but I just don't, at the moment, I don't really see many legitimate options. I think they brought him in here with the thought that he will be the starter. And, look, I'd like to tell you that middle linebacker in this draft is deep, but it's not. It's just not. And quite honestly, even with Ragland, John, you know this from being in Indianapolis, there's mixed feelings about him.
There are.
So
some people love him and they think he's good enough for 10. Others think he's a 20s guy. Can he cover? That's the question.
You know?
And in this day and age in the NFL, if you're using a first-round pick and a linebacker, that dude better be on the field for 3 downs to cover.
And now, again, what we talked about earlier in the show about Robinson, he's more of an athletic guy,
right,
plays well in space. He's played in a 3-4.
He's a 3-down guy.
He's got to convert to a 4-3 guy in the middle.
Yeah.
That's probably why when Sam talked about before, he said, you know what, his run grade hasn't been as good. Well, he's been a more space guy, not a guy who's been, you know, slamming his nose up into the line of scrimmage. That's not what he's been doing.
And I want to wrap up the show here.
You have to do it now.
And I stress, if you're just joining us now, go back. The archive will be up on Giants.com. We had Sam Monson on from Pro Football Focus. He was fantastic at around 12:10 or so, 12:12,
yeah.
I think he popped on. Go back to the archive. Check it out. It was a great informative spot. A couple things that I think stuck out. I just want to bring them up for the fans who maybe didn't hear it as we say goodbye here. One, I thought his snap numbers on snacks, like you mentioned earlier, was big, that he maxed out last year at 54%,
I think he said.
Whatever it was. So you're looking at a guy that's going to play half your plays pretty much on defense.
I mean.
And he'll be great on half those plays.
Yeah.
Now, maybe the Giants will play him more. They'll give him more of a chance to rush the passer. We'll see how that works out. The other thing that he didn't talk about, but I noticed, I watched probably about 3 Jet games because I was trying to pick out the inside the film room plays for Bob Pop and David Deal. So I watched Harrison a lot. He wasn't double-teamed as much as you would think. Because I think teams are so concerned with Leonard Williams and Richardson and Wilkerson. He didn't get as many double teams as I thought he would. A lot of times teams let their center block him.
How'd they do?
Not well. A lot of times you would see off the snap, Snacks gets his hands on that center, and he's a yard and a half back in the back.
Okay.
But in the 4-3, you're not playing right over the center.
No.
He's going to take on the guard, and then the center might also be coming over to do a little chippy-chippy. So I'm curious to see how Snacks handles that, but we'll see.
And, of course, interesting to see how a guard and tackle, because teams may not want to commit a running back or a tight end. They may want to get them out. Now you're talking about a guard and a tackle dealing with Vernon.
Absolutely. And I thought the other interesting fact Sam gave us was that, in his experience, having a really good tackle, that doesn't necessarily open things up for a defensive end.
I don't know that I agree with him.
Here's the question, though. Usually, if you're helping out on an edge rusher, and maybe this is the logic, you get a chip with the tight end, right? That's one thing you can do. That's obviously not going to affect what you do with a DT.
Although nowadays, most tight ends, they're lining them up, they're standing them up, they're slotting them out.
True.
They're not doing a lot of that anymore.
But how often do you see a team hold a running back in the backfield to help out on a defensive tackle? Usually you see him go out there and chip the end.
Usually.
So I guess maybe that's where he's coming from.
Although, rule number one, and folks, I don't mean to bore you with this, but rule number one of a blitz picker-upper playing running back in your backfield.
Inside out.
Always inside out.
Absolutely.
Because what you need to do is make sure that you prevent the shortest path to the quarterback.
Which is from the inside. That's
yes,
absolutely true. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. He did say Vernon did not see a lot of double teams last year. And we'll see how then teams now adjust to him this year now that more of his plays on tape.
Hello, Redskins, Cowboys, Eagles. Feel free to single up Vernon.
Well,
please do.
Well, the Cowboys did that last year, and he whipped Tyron Smith for a game. And I watched a lot of that game. That was really impressive. I watched that on tape this week.
Please do.
All right, everybody. Paul Dottino, John Schmelk, Big Blue Kickoff Live, Lance Meadow and I tomorrow. We'll talk to Bill Rabinowitz. He covers Ohio State, and we'll talk about some of the guys coming out of Buckeye country the day after their presidential primary tonight. So it'll be a big Ohio couple of days here in New York Giants land. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks for joining us.
See ya.
We'll see you tomorrow.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.